I think, you know, having female leadership, having, you know, women in higher level roles and, you know, some of the more technical roles is really important. Our head of product is actually a woman. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, touching on some of the benefits and the flexibility, you know, if you're a working mom, it's important to be able to, you know, at least work hybrid, you know, not go into the office 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Also having great benefits and flexibility with that. And then also, a mentor program, I think is great too. You know, I've had really amazing female mentors in my life, at different companies that I've worked at SuccessFactors and at Optimizely. And I wouldn't be where I'm at this point in my career if it wasn't for them.
Welcome to Women Disrupting Tech. My name is Dirk Jan Hupkes, and on this podcast, I give the women who work in tech the platform they need to inspire and empower each other. Join me on a journey into the world of entrepreneurship, funding, biases, and role models to discover the strategies for success in the tech industry. In other words, how women can disrupt tech. Are you ready to listen? Hey, welcome back to Women Disrupting Tech. Thank you for listening to the 45th episode. On this episode, we'll discover how to create a recruitment playbook for your tech startup. And our guide on this journey into the world of startup recruiting is Alexa Lane. Nothing brings Alexa more joy than landing people their dream job, and Alexa has more than a decade of recruiting experience for various sized SaaS startup companies. Alexa is currently the head of recruitment at Placements.io. That's an online platform that helps companies like Microsoft, Apple, and Salesforce run their online ads in one place. In this episode, we'll talk about what it takes to work for a tech startup from a recruiter's point of view, the art of negotiating a good offer, and we'll discover how to write a recruitment playbook that ensures that your startup recruits the right people for the right roles. So when you're ready to listen and learn, please welcome to Women Disrupting Tech, Alexa Lane. So good morning, Alexa. Great to have you. A question I always ask at the start of the podcast is how you got into your current job or in your current position, and start wherever you want.
Morning. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah.
So I grew up in the Bay Area, which is near San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And after college, moved back to San Francisco. And my first job out of school was doing marketing, actually, at a bigger company, which was already public at that time, called SuccessFactors. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did marketing. And then somebody that I was friends with was working at this startup at the time called Yelp, which was pretty new. You are probably familiar with it now.
Yep.
It was in San Francisco. They were hiring account executives, and it sounded interesting. And I was, you know, excited to be at like a new startup. At that time, Jeremy Stoppelman was the CEO. He was one of the founders at PayPal. So I decided to make the jump over to sales. And I liked aspects of it, but I really didn't like asking people for money. I always felt bad about it. So I had this great mentor. She was also my manager at the time at SuccessFactors. And after living in San Francisco for a few years, I kind of got the itch to move somewhere different. And I had never been to New York. I had family there, but I had always wanted to move there. So she actually kind of pushed me out of my comfort zone and encouraged me to, you know, take the leap, move to New York, try something different. And I don't think if she had given me that advice and pushed me, I would have ever done it. So I had this window of opportunity where I was 25, didn't have a family yet, didn't have a boyfriend, didn't have anything tying me down. So I decided to take the leap. And then I actually ended up moving into recruiting. I had somebody at the time at Yelp who had told me they thought I would be really good at it because there's a lot of marketing and sales that goes into it, except you're essentially marketing and selling a person instead of a product. So,
and you're not asking for money, but you're giving.
You're not asking for money, but there's definitely a lot of similarities. And my first role was doing agency recruiting. So I worked with a lot of different size startups, some bigger ones, but a lot of like mid-sized startups or, you know, Series A companies. And I worked on the agency side for a while and then ended up moving in-house recruiting after that and have been there ever since.
Okay. So you worked, you've been working also on the agency side of recruiting. What is the difference between being on the agency side and in a company itself?
A staffing agency in recruiting is when you work with multiple different companies. So you're recruiting for a lot of different companies, but you're not working like for that company specifically. Yeah. So I moved over where like I'm an in-house recruiter for a company specifically and only, you know, recruiting for that one company. Yeah. So
what made it attractive? Because you worked pretty much all your working life, except for SuccessFactors, you worked in startups. What made it attractive for you to go there and to stay there in that world?
Yeah, I liked, you know, kind of pitching a lot of different types of companies and, you know, working with different companies, but I really wanted to be like in-house, on-site, you know, with the founders, with leadership, with the hiring managers day to day. And then I also missed being in like, you know, a true startup environment because that's what Yelp was. Yeah. So that's why I decided to move, you know, in-house. And then my first kind of in-house recruiting role was a company called Optimizely.
Okay. What made the let's say the startups themselves interesting to you? How do you choose those?
I think I love being at a startup. I love how, you know, the fast pace. I love, you know, the fact that you have a lot of autonomy, a lot of responsibility. Things are always changing. It's never a dull moment. It's never boring. You get to work really closely with leadership and have a lot of visibility. So that's something that, you know, if you're at a larger company and there's a lot of different layers of, you know, people, you don't get that. So that's what always drew me to startups. You know, I worked for obviously an agency and then I worked for SuccessFactors, which was a bigger company. But besides that, I've, you know, strictly been at startups and just absolutely love it.
And you're mostly you've worked for SaaS, so software as a service companies,
SaaS,
right?
Yep.
Is that a deliberate choice or was it just like, okay,
this I is... I got into SuccessFactors was my first job, which I got through like a family friend. And then after that, I just, you know, stayed in tech just because I enjoyed it and, you know, had the connections. And I think with, you know, different jobs that I got down the line was all through my network. So I feel like I just kind of stuck with it and can't imagine doing anything outside of tech at this point.
Okay. So you're currently working at placements.io.
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit more about the company and what's it like working for them?
Yeah. So we are about 54 employees globally. So we're headquartered in Seattle. We have offices in New York, Denver, London, Taiwan, and we opened up a Singapore office about 5 months ago.
Okay.
So we've grown a ton in the last 10 months since I started, which has been super exciting.
Yeah.
in terms of like what the company does, essentially we have a platform that makes it easier for companies to manage their digital advertising. And we work with some of the largest Fortune 20 companies like Walmart and Salesforce and Apple. And we just recently had a partnership with Microsoft as well.
Oh, that's quite cool because those, that's also tying back into tech, I would say, because it's Microsoft, Apple and Salesforce. And Salesforce used to be a startup, I think, even.
Yeah. Actually, the founder of my company started at Salesforce very early on when it was a much smaller company.
Okay. So it's, as I hear it, it's quite international.
Yes.
At placements.io. Did you know when you joined that it would be growing internationally?
I knew we were going to be doing a lot of hiring. I didn't know we were going to be opening up a Singapore office. So that was, you know, really cool and different. And getting to see it, you know, open up in a whole new region and country has been great. Yeah, we hired a country manager couple months after I started. And then he hired some salespeople there.
Mm-hmm. So because how was that for you to, because you have to sort of hire into a market that you're, I don't know if you're familiar with Singapore at all.
No, I hadn't hired Asia. There at all. I've hired in other markets, like I've hired in Europe, I've hired in Australia, but I hadn't done Singapore specifically. So it's interesting when you hire in a new country or region because there's different laws and, you know, different, you know.
Texas also.
Yeah, it's just, it's completely different. So it's great getting that experience as well.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a bit about recruiting for startups. What does it take for me or for anyone listening to be a good startup employee or even the ideal candidate?
Yeah, I think we definitely look for people who can handle, you know, a fast-paced environment, like I spoke about, just because things are always constantly changing and moving. So I think somebody who's either, you know, worked at a startup environment or maybe worked at a bigger company in a startup, so they know what to expect. I think, you know, we've hired people in the past who've like only come from a bigger company and they're not, you know, they're used to more resources. So it's a lot more challenging. So somebody, you know, who can handle a fast-paced, constantly changing environment, somebody with an entrepreneurial mindset, somebody who thrives with ambiguity and can deal with that.
Is there an age factor in that as well?
No, not necessarily an age factor. I think just, you know, having worked at a startup before and, you know, wanting to be at a company that's growing and, you know, being able to be a part of that and being creative and, you know, thinking of different ways to impact the company and make it better. We definitely look for that when we're interviewing candidates.
Okay. So just double click for me on what it means to have a fast-paced environment, because it's, sort of a buzzword that you read in all the job ads.
Sure.
But what does it mean besides being used to ambiguity and sort of within the bounds of the company doing your own thing?
Yeah, like for my role, for example, things are just constantly changing, different day to day. I'm always, you know, I'm head of recruiting, but I'll deal with HR things that come up. You know, I have to kind of think outside the box and, you know, think about things on my own. Like, how do I work on like employer branding, talent branding? What do I need to do from an operational standpoint? So I'm always having to kind of think ahead and, you know, be strategic and be creative. So you want to hire somebody that's able to do that and able to, like, you know, implement new strategies and things like that.
Yeah, but also really creating something on your own. At least that's what I hear you say, that you have to think of employer branding and figure out how you're going to do that.
Yeah, I'm essentially kind of creating a recruiting playbook from scratch because we never had one in place. We didn't have recruiting. We didn't have an applicant tracking system, which is something you use to, you know, keep track of candidates and jobs. So that was all new, getting that implemented, that set up. So, you know, I had done that in previous roles, so I was able to do that. But I think, you know, if you've, like I said, if you're coming from a bigger company, you've had a million people working under you, you have a ton of resources, all of that is already in place, you're not going to be able to do that effectively the same way.
No. But you did have the playbook from previous startups.
Yeah. Well, when I worked at Pendo and Optimizely, they were bigger than placements. So they were, I think when I started at Optimizely, it was like 200 something employees. And Pendo was like 300. But the Pendo recruiting team was pretty small when I started. So we did have some things set up, but we had to like implement a lot of new things and kind of create a lot of new things from scratch.
Yeah.
So I had experience from seeing that and seeing how that was effective.
Yeah. So I want to touch a bit on recruiting, especially in tech. There's not a, let's say there's no overrepresentation of women.
Yes.
Especially in the technical domain, so the developer areas, let's say. How do you take that into account when you do recruiting? Is that something you take into account at all, or is it just
with hiring. So, I mean, I think, you know, hiring women, you know, DEI is always been really important and really been top of mind with, you know, all the startups that I've worked at. Right now at placements, I think, you know, hiring women is definitely a priority. It's definitely, we have more men than women at the company. So I definitely, you know, take that into consideration with hiring different roles, you know, like hiring engineering or product, you know, roles where typically they don't have as many women as men. So that's definitely something that's important. So when I'm talking to candidates, it's, you know, I need to, especially female candidates, I need to sell them on, you know, why would they want to come to placements? So I think, you know, something I do take into consideration is, you know, like benefits, work flexibility, something like that. That's important. You know, my company has great benefits. And so that's something that I take into account when, you know, trying to get candidates to come over.
Okay. So, do you take this into account in your employer branding at all?
Yes, absolutely. And that was something like that was true at Pendo and Optimizely. Like at Pendo, we had a lot of female leadership. So that was, you know, a great selling point when trying to get, you know, women to come on board, especially like when we were trying to hire women in sales. We
had I was about to say, doesn't that create a huge sort of strategic upside?
Yes. Yeah. We had a lot of women on the C-level team. So that was, you know, a big selling point when trying to recruit women over. So I think, you know, as I'm trying to, you know, grow placements and scale, having more female leadership is super important there, as well as, you know, some of the more technical, like engineering product type roles.
Okay. So what advice would you give tech founders in general to when they want to hire women in also in tech roles?
Yeah, I think, you know, having female leadership, having, you know, women in higher level roles and, you know, some of the more technical roles is really important. Our head of product is actually a woman. I think, you know, touching on some of the benefits and the flexibility, you know, if you're a working mom, it's important to be able to, you know, at least work hybrid, you know, not go into the office 5 days a week. Also having great benefits and flexibility with that. And then also, you know, like a mentor program, I think is great too. You know, I've had really amazing female mentors in my life, at different companies that I've worked at SuccessFactors and at Optimizely. And I wouldn't be where I'm at this point in my career if it wasn't for them. So I think setting up some type of mentor mentee program, also something called like an affinity group. So we used to have this at Optimizely and Pendo where we had different like affinity groups. And I just started one at placements for women specifically. So it's, you know, the women of the company, we get together like once a quarter and it's kind of an open forum. You can talk about, you know, hiring women at the company or different women's issues. It's really kind of whatever anybody wants to talk about.
Okay, that's cool. Also, I think it's really important to have a good mentor program if you, or at least a setup where you encourage mentor-mentee relationships. What benefit has, because you had various mentors, I think.
Yes.
And you talked at start also about one of your first managers who encouraged you to New York. What else has it, what has it brought you to have mentors? And do you still have one?
Yeah. So at Optimizely, I had a manager and she was amazing manager and mentor. And she actually helped me get really good at negotiating. So I think that was something that at the time I wasn't as good at. Like I would I would get an offer from a company and would not negotiate at all, would just kind of take what they gave me. And she was like incredible at negotiating and got me to be at a point where I, you know, became super confident and I was able to negotiate really well for myself, as well as, you know, with candidates when trying to bring them on board.
Okay, so let's double click on the negotiation part, because what do you negotiate for when you are recruiting for or at the recruitee side of things.
Yeah, so I think there's always a little bit of room for negotiation. Uh-huh. So there's a way to, you know, ask, you can always ask for things without being too pushy. Uh-huh. So I oftentimes will, you know, if there's no more budget, I always try to negotiate for other things. So whether that's, you know, maybe like working from home an extra day or equity, I think obviously that's something that's important with startups. Mm-hmm. So I've, you know, definitely negotiated more equity at different companies that I've been at and other things. So I think negotiation is really important. And I think oftentimes women don't have the same types of confidence as men do to ask for more. So I think it's really important for women to have that confidence and be able to ask for things, because, you know, they may offer more or they may not, but it doesn't hurt to ask.
Uh-huh. When I spoke to Caroline Catwell, the person who actually brought us together, she said that women need to negotiate slightly differently from how men do it. So men will say like, okay, I've achieved this and this and this, so that corresponds with this job grade, with this pay, so what do you think? Whereas women, according to Caroline, should focus more on the collaborative part of it. Is that also your experience?
Yeah, I think it depends on the role and the person. I've had some women before where they said, you know, let me be in the role, you know, I'll show you how effective I am for the 6 months. And then I think, you know, after that, I deserve X, Y, Z. So I've had that. Or, you know, I oftentimes, like I said, I'll just, you know, ask for certain things if I think, you know, it's worth asking for. And if like they're not able to push it all, then that's fine. But it doesn't hurt to ask.
Yeah. So, but do you also look at the more collaborative part of it? Like, okay, how can we get to a certain point so that as a result, I get
Absolutely. I think I did that with my current company where, you know, I said, you know, I think I'd like to see this amount of results in, you know, a year period of time. If I'm able to achieve that, I'd like to get to the next, you know, goal in my career. So for me, with joining a startup, you know, kind of title, role, scope of role, responsibilities was more important to me than, you know, necessarily like base pay or something like that.
Okay. I want to switch gears a bit because you're a working mom.
I am.
But you also have a mother yourself. What was her role in your career?
Yeah, so my mom has always been super driven, super smart, impressive, and you know, she was an amazing role model for me. So she is a lawyer, a food and drug law attorney. And she actually was partner in her law firm. So she retired a few years ago. But she was, you know, super successful and driven and, you know, still managed to do it all while having two kids. So
yeah. Oh, that's,
I always looked up to her and, you know, wanted to be able to replicate that as well. I don't think I do it nearly as well, but she was, you know, a huge mentor for me. Absolutely.
Yeah. Becoming a parent is usually a learning curve.
Yes.
So you don't do it right the first time and you have to find out a lot of things.
Yeah, it's very trial by error. I think, you know, the first time you're kind of like a deer in headlights. You have no idea what you're doing. You're reading books, but each kid is so different. You know, the books only apply to a certain degree. So I feel like the second time has been a lot easier because I feel more comfortable. I know what I'm doing. It's just more challenging because now I have two kids that I'm juggling. Yeah. But I have a better understanding of what to do, but.
Okay. Out of curiosity, how did she respond when you moved to New York?
So it was funny. I actually only planned on moving to New York for a couple years. That was the initial plan. And then I met my now husband in New York and, you know, ended up settling down here and staying here and having kids here. So I think, you know, she wasn't thrilled that I I relocated here because obviously, yeah, you know, they wanted to be closer to me and wanted to be closer to the kids. But that's just how it ended up being. But, you know, I also have my career here. And when I was moving here at the time, obviously tech was much bigger in the Bay Area. But now New York has something called Silicon Alley, which has really gotten big over the last, I don't know, 8 to 10 years. Okay. So now there's a lot of tech presence in New York as well. So I have a really big network here and have a lot of tech companies that I know and have worked with in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that was also one of the things that popped into my mind. Like you're moving out of Silicon Valley, which is sort of the center of it all.
Yeah.
To New York.
Yeah, it was more, you know, at the time I wanted to try living in New York just because, you know, it was this exciting city. My best friend from college was living there at the time. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to, you know, say I had moved to New York and lived there. But then I ended up meeting my husband and having a career and getting established here. So that's why I ended up staying. And now it's been 11 years. So.
Oh, wow. Is the tech ecosystem different from Silicon Valley?
In New York?
Yeah. In terms of culture?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Also, the Bay Area tech culture has changed a lot. A lot of people have been leaving the Bay Area because it's very expensive and moving to Austin and Denver. Mm-hmm. So those have become much bigger tech hubs. And also like Portland, Oregon, Seattle. So a lot of people have been leaving the Bay Area.
Yeah.
Because also people, we're going to have to go back to San Francisco offices, and a lot of people live in the South Bay and there's a big commute and a lot of traffic. So it's very different than it was when I lived there.
Okay. So the sort of the the original Silicon Valley is now Silicon Alley.
I feel like tech is a lot more dispersed now, where it used to be everything was in California. Yeah, it was in the Bay Area, but now it's kind of, there's just so many different tech hubs. But for my company, we only hire in our, you know, US offices because we're hybrid. So we only hire in Denver, Seattle, or New York.
Okay. And then it doesn't matter where you live, provided that you can come to one office or that you
Yeah, anybody that lives in one of those locations for a role. So it's like, say we're hiring a product person, we'll hire somebody who's either in Seattle, New York, or Denver.
Okay, okay.
Just any of, just because it is hybrid, so they do have to come into the office 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't really matter which.
Yeah, it can be any 3 days.
Okay, okay.
Which is nice, because I know some companies have a mandate where it's like, you have to be in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Which can be, if you have like doctor's appointments or other stuff, it can be challenging to only do those specific days. So it's nice to have flexibility with that.
Mm-hmm. So as you said, you are also a mom yourself, of a mother of two. How do you compare that with working in a growing company?
Yeah, it's very challenging as well. I think I definitely use maybe some skill sets that I use from working in tech as long as I have with being a mom, in terms of, you know, being very detail oriented. I have to deal with a lot of like kind of scheduling Tetris with with nannies and with, you know, different like events and things for my daughter, different planning. She does a lot of different like gymnastics and soccer, different activities.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I think also with like hiring nannies and babysitters, I've taken my recruiting skill set into effect. I'm very good at, you know, interviewing people and doing that just because of my background. So,
yeah, I can imagine that it's an upside for you to have that recruiting background, because at least you know how to interview people.
Yes.
Otherwise,
But I think also, you know, I have had some management experience, so being able to be, you know, very patient with kids is very important, especially at the toddler stage.
Yes. I want to move towards the end. I have an arrangement with Jacqueline van den Ende. She's the one of the co-founders of a firm called Carbon Equity. It's an investment mm-hmm. management firm that invests only in climate tech startups. And when we spoke, she actually told me, well, your podcast has to be sort of obsolete or irrelevant in 10 years from now, which is just under 9 years now. So my question to all my guests and also to you, Alexa, is what would be your advice to make that happen, to make the podcast irrelevant in 10 years?
Right. I think coming up with a DEI strategy for companies and being able to implement that is really important, especially mm-hmm. with things like interview training mm-hmm. And making sure, you know, you're reducing bias when interviewing. Mm-hmm. As well as having, you know, more like learning and development type things. I think like a head of DEI is really important. We had that at Pendo, you know, having somebody to really make sure that these goals are being hit when you come mm-hmm. up with, you know, specific DEI strategies within a company. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be the best way to make it irrelevant in 10 years.
Okay, and does that head of DEI, for instance, in a startup, does that have to, is that a separate role or is that something one of the founders just takes on because
We actually had a specific head of DEI at Pendo, who that was mm-hmm. her role, where, you know, she would come up with different like initiatives, different trainings, mm-hmm. You know, help with hiring managers in terms of, you know, reducing bias with interviewing, how to interview better. Mm-hmm. She also helped with like job descriptions in terms of having like inclusive language. So that was, you know, and that made us as a company, you know, much better in terms of like hitting the specific goals that we had.
Yeah, that I can understand. Are there specific biases that you have as a recruiter then? Besides, there's always sort of bias because you're looking at another person, but you're making assumptions.
Think, there's always, you know, some type of bias. I think, you know, I've definitely been doing a lot of interview training mm-hmm. At my company as we've been continuing to hire more just because we weren't hiring at that level. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I encourage people like not to talk to each other before submitting their scorecards about a candidate because you don't want to, you know, be influenced by another person. You know, we have a referral program, but try to not focus too much on just getting referrals. Cause I think if you keep, you know, referring people within your network,
you get the same, more of the same.
Yeah. So it's good to, you know, have a more diverse network, have a more diverse, panel as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, you know, I've tried to make sure that we have, you know, women, underrepresented minorities on the panel, just so it's not, you know, all the same. So I think that's really important as well.
Okay. So also having a diverse review panel for applications.
Yes.
And do you do that only in what stage of the application stage do you do that? In the, when they look at the resume or also in terms of the interviewing process?
More interviewing. So usually our process is, you know, I go through all the applications. I do mm-hmm. all the sourcing on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. I do all the recruiter screens. And then there's mm-hmm. a hiring manager interview. And then after that, we do like an interview panel.
Yeah.
And then a case study exercise.
Yeah.
And so that's with like a panel of people as well who like partake in it.
Okay. And that panel is then needs to be as diverse as possible.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
really
thank you.
Really enjoyed our conversation.
Me too.
Last question, where can listeners find out more about you and about placements.io?
So we have our website, uh-huh. placements.io, and then you can connect with me on LinkedIn, Alexa Krasny Lane.
Okay, great. And we'll include those links in the show notes. Well, Alexa, really thank you very much. Really enjoyed
thank
our
you so much.
Chat. And listeners, thank you very much for listening and hope to see you in the next episode. Well, that's it. Thank you for listening to episode 45 of Women Disrupting Tech about how to create a recruiting playbook for your tech startup. Alexa and I hope that you've enjoyed our conversation as much as we did, and we want to say thank you to Caroline Catwell for connecting us. If you want to learn more about Alexa, feel free to connect with her via the links in the show notes, and in the show notes you can also find a link to the websites of placements.io. As usual, you can find the show notes at womendisruptingtech.blog. On the same website, you can also become a member of the Women Disrupting Tech community. Members get exclusive access to Women Disrupting Tech events, and you're the first to learn when new episodes or blogs come online. For your weekly dose of Women Disrupting Tech inspiration, you can also follow the podcast on Spotify, Apple, and Good Pods. If you're a regular listener, please don't forget to give the show a rating or a review, because that way you help other people discover the podcast. If you want to help Alexa and other women in tech make this podcast obsolete by the end of 2032, there's a simple thing you can do. Please share the podcast with friends, family, and coworkers, because this way you give my guests, including Alexa, the platform they need to make it happen. Finally, if you want to connect with me, you can reach me at dirkjan@womendisruptingtech.blog, or you can reach out at LinkedIn. On LinkedIn, just look up my name and you'll find me. With that, I wish you a wonderful day. I hope to see you in the next episode, and keep being awesome.